podcast that you're listening to is being presented to you with the cooperation of the SJ Network. If you're a person who needs a publicist and you want to appear on podcasts, contact Stephen Joyner at s-j-network.com. Let's get on with the show.
You know, it looks like today's guest, Darren Dollar, can do it all. Actor, singer, author, director, songwriter, impressionist, and lots more.
But do you think he could be a podcast Shurpa?
Well, if he gets the right prize out of the Cracker Jack box, I don't see why not.
Attention, rebels of the Sherpollution. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. We would like to give you a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial simply by heading to www.audibletrial.com/Sherpa. There are over 180,000 titles of audiobooks and podcasts, including this one, to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And now, the one and only Mr. Bruce will lead you into the Sherpa Chalet. As a reminder, any similarities to podcasts that are actually funny is likely a violation of the laws of physics.
Coming to you from Sherpa Chalet in beautiful downtown Mount Podcastia, it's time for entertainment interviews in the Sherpa screening room. Grab an aisle seat and a bucket of popcorn, but don't crunch too loud or you'll miss the show. Now, here's your host, Jim, the podcast Sherpa.
Hello there, Rebels, and welcome to the Sherpa Screening Room, a presentation of Too Many Podcasts. Me, that's me, talking to you, Jim the Podcast Sherpa. Hello there. And we've got a really entertaining guest this week. His name is Darren Dowler. Some of you might know Darren as the lead singer of Paul Revere's Raiders. He's doing the solo thing right now, but this guy's got an amazing voice, and he's got a really wide open career. He is a singer, an actor, songwriter, an impressionist, and he did some impressions for us. Of course, nobody gets out of the Sherpa Chalet without doing an impression if they're an impressionist. And a great guy and a lot of fun, too. And before we kick off the interview with Darren, so we're going to bookend the interview with two of Darren's songs. And the first song that you'll hear leading into the interview is a song called Take Care of Her Heart. Have a listen.
Show. You'll say and try to do things don't even know. You think love is a spice, but you see, it's the one thing you wanna know. This may be your last chance, so make sure you don't blow it. Put your hand up in the air and be noticed. Let the world know that you care, that you voted. Dream of all the things and places you want to go. Love, can't you see, is the reason for life. Without it, your heart will be filled with nothing but strife. Is the fuel for the heart. Only fools don't see it's been that way from the start. Take care of her heart.
Welcome to the Sherpa Screening Room. You know, when we do the Sherpa Screening Room, I usually have actors, I have screenwriters, I have directors, I have singers, I have songwriters, I have impressionists. They are all here tonight, and they are in the guise of my one guest. He is a musician, and we'll just really say he's an entertainer, and he has performed or shared a stage with either Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers, Paul Revere and the Raiders, Gary Puckett and the Union Gap, the Letterman, the Beach Boys, Al Jardine, Mitch Ryder in the Detroit Wheels, Chuck Negron of Three Dog Night, Mary Wilson of the Supremes, the Fifth Dimension, the original lead guitarist for the Backstreet Boys, the OJs, the Jordanaires, Jerry Lee Lewis, and even Van Halen. His name is Mr. Darren Dowler, and he's also an actor, and we'll be talking about everything in his career. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. You have me doing my homework, sir. So, Darren, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be here, man. I appreciate that. I apologize for that intro sheet. It seems like I do a lot of stuff, but I've just been doing it all my whole life, so it's kind of natural for me.
It seems like a pretty good timeline for you, though. So what came first? Were you a musician first that wanted to act, or were you an actor that wanted to be a musician?
It's a really interesting story, at least to me, anyway, and maybe nobody else will think so. I started off in school, in high school. I actually wanted to be a jock. I'd come from kind of a low-income single mother, raising me, and so I wanted to be a jock so I could go to college. And that was kind of my way out of, being poor. And I never really knew I was poor because I had such a great mother. But so one day, I've always played and sang because all of my relatives are musicians. My mother, my father, my uncles, my aunts, cousins, you name it. Everybody plays and sings something. They're all from the hills. And as a matter of fact, you might know a couple of my famous cousins. June Carter and Johnny Cash are my cousins. William Lee Golden of the Oak Ridge Boys, he is a cousin. So it's kind of a thing. You grow up playing and singing because it's just in our blood. But I wasn't going to follow that. I was going to be an athlete. And what happened was, it's real simple. I was 14 years old. I had dreams of being a big athlete. And I was just getting into high school and stuff. And I was working for $2.35 or $2.36 an hour at a hotel. And this guy came up to me and says, "Hey, man, your mom says you play acoustic guitar and sing." I said, "Yeah, I do a little bit." He goes, "You want to play at my pub?" And I said, "No, I'm not interested in that." He goes, "Well, I'll give you $50 for 4 hours." I said, "Man, I'm really interested in that." That's where it started. I started making a living at like 14 playing guitar and singing in little pubs in Daytona Beach where I grew up. I tried to get out of it a dozen times, but no matter what I did, I kept getting dragged back into it by the universe or God, whatever you want to call it. There was a force guiding me back to entertainment. And here I am.
So you were like the Godfather in part three. Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Yeah, yeah. I just got out and they pull me back in.
Oh, yes. We neglected to mention that Darren also does impressions as well. We're going to get to that because nobody visits the show who's an impressionist gets away with not doing an impression on the show. So
here we go.
I will hold you to that.
Okay. Well, I'm here, man. Let's do a show.
Okay. So you were a musician first. How did you get like your big break? Because I mean, that's a lot of well-known bands that you really got involved with in a pretty good stretch of time.
It was actually part of a master plan, believe it or not. I was playing music around Florida for a few years. I had done, I'd gone to New York at 17, spent a couple of years up there to learn my craft. And I took, acting from some of the biggest, most impressive acting coaches that existed at that time. And I spent a lot of time doing training and dance and theater and music and singing. And I was this rock and roll beach kid who went to New York. And then before you know it, I was doing like theater and doing all this other stuff. And I fell in love with acting when I was up there. The way it worked is I went back to Florida. I started doing stuff. I even got cast in a Broadway show and toured for a couple of years with that. Nothing was happening in Florida. I thought Florida was going to be the next Hollywood because Universal Studios opened and everything. And I did every show that was in town and then it was done. So basically, I had an idea. I said, if I go out to where the big acts are, maybe I can meet some headliners and get much bigger and better jobs. So that's what I did. I took a job as the lead singer and dancer in a casino show in Reno, Nevada at Sammy's Showroom at Harrah's. And every headliner that came through town played that room. My dressing room was right next to theirs. So, while there, I met the Letterman. I met Bill Medley. I met BJ Thomas. I met Paul Revere and the Raiders. I met so many acts I can't even, and I made friends with these people because, we hung out together. We sang together. I'd sit in on their shows. So what happened was I was there one night singing and dancing in that show, and I got a call from Tony Butala, the Letterman. And I was really young at the time. And he said, "Hey, I know you're kind of a rock and blues guy, but we need a vocalist who's got a really high range. And I think your voice would really mix well with ours because we're looking to do something a little different, yet keep the same sound." So I went to the Nugget in Reno, and I sang with Tony Butala and Donovan T for about an hour. And it was just like magic. We blended like it was magical. So before you know it, I was in the group and on worldwide tour with those guys. I mean, literally playing around the world and doing albums. And it was just a really wonderful, wonderful time. And through that job, I was one of the youngest inductees into the Vocal Group Hall of Fame. And I became a host for that. Well, doing that hosting with the Letterman, I met everybody who's in a music group. And so when somebody would quit, have a drug issue or die, I was kind of the guy everybody started calling because they knew my vocal range was really broad and my styles were broad. So before you know it, I'd sung for a harmony group, a hard rock group. One of the best the biggest R&B groups in the history and then 10 other groups. And I was just like, wow, time went by so fast. I'm not even sure how it all happened, to be honest with you.
I would probably advise people if they want to like look you up on YouTube and see some of your performances. When you're saying that you performed a variety of music, I think you're a little prone to understatement there, Darren. I mean, there is just so much that this man can sing, and you definitely have the vocal chops to do that. When you were growing up in Florida, what kind of music did you like to listen to?
Oh, I was really big into what everybody else was into, like hard rock and the metal that was starting to form at that time. I was into blues and R&B and rockabilly. I was into things like John Lee Hooker and Elvis Presley. And I loved great vocals. So I was into people like Tom Jones and Gary Puckett, of course. Gary's always been one of my favorites. Burton Cummings. I was into that kind of stuff. And then anything that had a great sounding electric guitar mixed with great vocals is kind of where my ear fell. So I started listening to guys who had great guitarists in the band, but also had great vocals. So, yeah, I was doing a lot of blues, a lot of R&B, a lot of funk. And I naturally fell toward blues for some reason, probably because of my following of Elvis Presley as a kid. But I liked a big, big, powerful sound as well. So automatically, I loved listening to Tom Jones and guys like him with big voices because I wanted to learn to sing that big, relaxed, open sound and not that clenched little sound that some people had. I wanted to have a big sound. And so those are the guys that I learned from. And and then Southern Rock, I was listening to, you know, Leonard Skinner. I was listening to Bad Company and the Guess Who and people like that.
Yes, you were really definitely all over the musical map. How did you get involved with the Backstreet Boys? You were their original lead guitarist, you said?
So I was playing in Orlando at the time. I was in a big rock and roll band in Orlando. We were kind of the band in Orlando. And this guy came to me. We were a real serious rock and roll, hard Southern rock and roll band. So it was pretty serious music. And I'll never forget, this guy comes to me back then, and real nice guy. He's a manager. And he says, "Hey, man, I've been following your band for a long time. There's this new group this guy's putting together, and I need some guys to play and sing with them, maybe do some harmonies, and I need a lead guitar player. It's a boy band." And I laughed at the time. I was like, "Look, man, I'm in a Southern rock band in Florida. I can't tell my friends I'm playing lead guitar for a boy band."
And they'll run you out of the state.
That's exactly what would happen. I was like, "I can't do that, man." And then he goes, "Well, we'll pay you $100 a rehearsal." I said, "Oh, okay, well, I'm in." $100 a rehearsal. Hey, what are we going to get for concerts? I'm going to start.
I'm sensing a little theme here, Darren.
Yeah. Well, I made my mind up. You know, at one point, I had every bad job known to man. I mean, I did every crappy job you could have for about 10 years in between the music gigs. And I just made my mind up one day. I said, "You know, I love music and I love performing. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to make my living as a performer. Regardless what I have to do, that's what I'm going to do." So that's when I got into singing and acting, and I started doing theater because, you know, I was just very fortunate. You know, the rock and roll scene would dry up, and this producer would call me and say, "Hey, I'm doing a series of shows in the Northeast, dinner theater. It's like six shows for the whole season, and I'll pay you this and I'll pay you that." And I said, "Well, it's a job." So I went and did it. And then before you know it, I was doing, like, you know, larger regional theaters. And then I did off-Broadway. And then before you know it, I landed a Broadway show. Unlike most actors, though, because I did fall in love with acting as much as I did music. And so I've been studying acting my whole life. I mean, I'm writing a book about acting, actually. The thing that was funny about it was every opportunity that would open, right after another one would close down. And I found that by knowing how to do these different things, I could keep working. And so, but I found that I liked television and film. Unlike most actors who love stage, they love being on a stage and doing a play and a musical. I do love that. I mean, I like it, but my thing is television and film. I love being on a TV set or a film set. So when I got to LA back in 95, I think it was, I instantly got into a film school there. I started shooting and making independent films, and I started acting in television and film, and I just never stopped. You know, I just fell in love. I just love creativity of any kind, I think. That's why I like the film business, because it allows me to be a musician, an actor, director, whatever.
Yeah, and there was definitely a wide variety of TV shows that you did, too. You know, it was funny, before we started our interview, I had looked at your website, darrendowler.com, and there were a collection of your headshots. And I'm like, which guy am I going to be talking to when I do the interview? Because they all look completely different. I mean, you look like a guy who really gets immersed in his roles, just with the look alone.
I do. I really get into it. You know, I've played everything from a bad guy to a monster to a police officer to, you know, the husband to the doctor. I've done it all. But I really do. I come from a kind of an old school way of acting where you do completely immerse yourself and become the role. That's part of the fun of it. You know, it's like, you know, doing, like, one of the latest movies I did was, I don't know if you've heard of this movie, it's called Palau. And it's a story about Luis Palau. And he's one of the biggest evangelists in the world. And this movie's incredible. And it was a couple of years ago at this point. And they cast me as Billy Graham in the movie. So I get to play Reverend Billy Graham. And so for a month, I just all day watched Billy Graham videos, and I researched him, and I read everything I could find on him, and I listened to his voice, and I listened to his cadence and his delivery. And there's probably a picture on there somewhere, but, you know, they cut all my hair off real short and gave me that swoop, and I had the Billy Graham haircut going, you know. And when they put the suit on me, I said, "Wow, I feel like Billy Graham."
I'm wondering, like, when you play roles like that, especially if you're portraying people, I mean, you're a guy who's been on stage. So especially with a charismatic person like Billy Graham, you know how to carry your swagger on stage, and you've done impressions. So you know how to, you know, capturing the essence of these people and everything like that. So was it like an easy transition for you, or it was just you just kind of made it like a process up until that point.
I started doing impressions when I was really young. I started doing impressions when I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And I did it to entertain my mother because I found I could do cartoon voices. And every time I do it, I'd hear her laughing hysterically in the other room. And, you know, my mom worked really hard and she worked 2 and 3 jobs to support us. And so when I heard her laugh, it was magical. So I started doing more impressions just because I wanted her to laugh more. So and it also helped me a lot too, because, you know, I was kind of, you know, being that she worked a lot, I was by myself a lot. So I got in some trouble as a kid. I probably wasn't, you know, the most easy kid to have, you know, but I remember she came home one day and I was in trouble. And so she looked at me like, she goes, "What did you do?" And I said, "Please don't hit me, Mommy." And as soon as I did that, she started laughing and I was out of trouble. And I was like, "Oh, I'm going to do an impression every time I get in trouble."
Well, I guess you probably have to stay away from like politicians because, like, you know, I'm not a crook. You know? Well, that's not going to help you, Darren.
Well, I actually do a lot of politicians. I don't worry about cancel culture. I don't worry about political correctness. None of that stuff even enters my sphere. I think it's ridiculous, and everybody else can deal with that. I'm going to do my thing, and if you don't want to see it, don't come see my show. But like, for instance, I used to, for years, back when we could do commercials as celebrities, we can't do it anymore unless we pay big money for it. But I used to do a lot of celebrity voices for commercials. I had a little voiceover studio in my Florida house. I used to do Elvis Presley. I used to do him. But one of my big ones was Slick Willie. I used to do, if you ever heard like Bill Clinton in a commercial on the radio, it was me. I remember one, it was like, "How y'all doing? It's good to see y'all here today. Yeah. I'm here to talk about Taco Tico. I love tacos, as you all know. And you put the word Tico after it, well, Hillary's coming. I got to go."
I saw a performance you did that. Was it the Bill Clinton Blues?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. The battery went out of my Rolex. My Beamer got a flat. Yeah, I remember that one now. Yeah, people can look up the Bill Clinton Blues, I think, on YouTube or something.
And you're actually one of the few singers that I've known who does an impression of Michael Bolton.
Yeah, I've been doing Bolton a lot. You know, it's funny. I never thought about doing Bolton because his voice is really gruff. And I was in Florida at the time, and it was back when I was doing those celebrity commercials. And I'd never done a Michael Bolton impression. And this guy called me and says, "Hey, man, do you do a Michael Bolton impression? Pays $300. I went, "Oh, absolutely. Surely I do a Michael Bolton impression." You know, back then, that was a lot of money. And I was sitting in my office going, "Okay, I've never done a Michael Bolton impression. It's one of those." I got really lucky because it was really easy to talk about love, to talk about trust. It was really easy for me to do because some impressions are hard. And some of them, I can learn some in 30 seconds. And then some of them, it takes me a year to get it down. So, you know, luckily for me, because that commercial was like the next day, Michael Bolton was one of the easy ones. And it became a staple of my show because, like you said, nobody else does that. So when I come out and do Michael Bolton, people are like, "Oh, that's cool." You know,
and you make that a section of your show when you're imitating singers.
I do. There's actually a promo on my YouTube page called Darren Dowler Live, where people can see a little bit of the show I do. I do about 20 minutes of comedy and impressions right in the middle of the show. We do music, kick butt, kick butt, kick butt, slow it down, comedy, impressions, blah, 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 blah. Then back to the music and we end the show. So it's pretty fun. Fast paced.
Yeah, so people are getting their money's worth when they go to definitely see you on stage there. They know you're not going to just be standing there and crooning.
That's definitely the goal. Yes.
With the music range that you have, how do you keep your voice in good shape? I mean, I've heard you sing like Robert Plant and then, you know, Tom Jones. And you, like you said, you need that big voice. And it's more than just luck that's going to get you through that.
Well, it's from years of singing and years of singing properly and building the muscles in my throat. And doing impressions is extremely stressful on the voice, much more so than your own natural voice. And so I had to learn techniques to do these impressions. It doesn't hurt that when I started, see, a lot of kids today, they don't have what we had when I was young. You know, I had clubs. I had club circuits where I could make a living playing guitar and singing with my band. You know, I'd make good living and I'd be singing 5-6 nights a week, 4 and 5 sets a night. So over the years, like 10 years of doing that, my vocal cords got very strong. And then on top of that, you know, I do try to take care of myself and I do, I'm really big into nutrition and natural nutrition and exercise. So I do take care of myself and I do eat well and I do use juice a lot and things like that. Mostly it's just singing every day, singing properly every day. and taking the time to learn your voice. That's what most people just start singing with some coach somewhere, and they just start blurting out notes. And what they don't understand, you know, your voice is just like a violin. Every single violin out there really plays and sounds different. And you have to figure that in. I've got 15 guitars in this room right now. Every single one of them plays and sounds differently. And it takes hours upon hours on each one of these instruments to figure out what that guitar is capable of, where it fits in my show, if it fits in my show or a recording. And that's what you have to do with your voice. You have to spend hours and hours practicing faithfully. I mean, you know what it's like. If you want to be a professional, you have to treat it like a business, and you have to be a professional. And, you know, I sing a couple of hours a day, even when I'm not on tour. I act an hour a day when I'm not on tour. You know, right in the middle of this album right now, I mean, I'm putting 10, 12 hours a day in the studio. And then as soon as we finish the tracks, while it's being mixed, we're going to go start shooting the videos. You know, we got 10 songs and 10 music videos that we're doing. So, it's a business. I treat it like a business. I keep it like a business, and I take it really seriously.
Since you're bringing it up, the album that you're working on, is that Back to the Garage? Is that what we're going to be looking forward to?
I am. Back to the Garage, I've done a lot of albums. I mean, I don't even know how many, because I've been with so many groups, and I've recorded multiple albums with each one of them. And then my own albums. I've got one album called New Directions on my website right now, which was a foray into country rock for me, because I had all these country songs, nothing to do with them. So we just decided, let's cut them. Let's cut the songs. They're great songs. Let's cut them and we'll put them out and see if people like them. And it's doing really well for me, even though I'm not really a country artist. But Back to the Garage is exactly what it sounds like. It's like, you know, I had to fit into different grooves in these different groups. No matter who I was working with or what I was doing, I had to fit into different grooves. I mean, when I sang with the Jordanaires at their induction, I had to do the Elvis part. So I had to come out and I had to do the Elvis thing for them. And then when I'm with the Letterman, I've got to keep true to the Letterman sound. When I'm with the Raiders, I try to keep it as true to the Raiders sound while still doing my own thing as I can. So it's kind of a balancing act. Mm-hmm. And all of those groups, I love them all. I respect them all. And it was an honor to sing with them. But every artist wants to paint on their own canvas. I don't care who you are. And so I did. I took some songs that I wrote 20 years ago. I've got brand new songs. I've got a song I wrote 10 years ago. I've got a couple songs I wrote over 20 years ago that I never recorded or recorded the way I wanted to. And I'm doing them now on this album. We're calling it Back to the Garage because it really feels like I'm going back to the garage band. I'm going back to my guitar, the guitar sound and style that I like. And people ask me what it is. I am a mix of pop, blues, and rock and roll. So if you like pop rock with a blues edge, that's what I do.
I like that. Yeah, that's a pretty good way to describe it. All right, I'm going to take a little bit of a left turn here. So I know you were also an author, and you wrote The War of the Angels.
Yes, yes. It's a novel that I wrote about, I wrote it in 2009, I think. I think we published it in 2010, 2011. It's been on the market for a few years. It's still selling very well. It's, as a matter of fact, interesting fact about that novel, The War of Angels, it's the story of the Archangel Michael coming back to Earth, present day, finding Satan. And they have another war for the world and for the souls of man with all their legions on modern day Earth. So if you could imagine sitting in your office and we're having this talk, and all of a sudden a 14-foot angel with a wingspan of 17 feet crashes through your roof. That's what these millions of angels are like. They're huge. That's what the book is about. I mean, it's a book of friendship. It's a romance. It's a book of war. It's a book of betrayal. It's a suspense action. It's got a fantasy element to it. So it's got a wide demographic. And so we are going to start shopping. Well, actually, I've started shopping. We're going to start shopping The War of Angels this year in Los Angeles to make a movie out of it.
You are one busy guy. Between the new album, you got a book that's going to be hopefully a movie, and you've also got the TV show that's coming out, John Christian, where you play a bounty hunter. Can you talk a little bit about that too?
Yeah, that's a passion project, really. I started writing John Christian about 2 years ago, and I was on the road, and I came up with this idea for a show. I had a theory. I said, what would it be like? Because I've always had this character I've been building. John Christian is a half-breed Indian who lives on the reservation. He was raised by his grandfather because his parents were killed when he was young. He's a white guy, but you know he's raised in the Indian ways. So one day he gets a letter, and that letter says, I don't know if you remember me. My name is Claudia. We spent a night together 16 years ago. Well, you have a daughter. I'm leaving the country in an emergency, and I need you to go take care of her. So John Christian stands up in his feet and he's like, what? I have a daughter. So he goes to this house and he finds this young girl who is his daughter, and she's never had a dad. He's never had a daughter. There's a lot of anger from her toward him, and he understands that because he's never been around. And he's got to try to take care of her for a few months till the mother comes back. And it just so happens the little town she lives in is full of some really, really bad characters. And so he kind of takes it upon himself, because it's such a bad town, to clean it up a little bit before he parts ways with her, so that she has a safer life. So he takes on some really bad guys. There's some mafia guys in there. There's a terrorist in there. There's a pedophile serial killer he has to deal with. The sheriff who runs the town is the worst guy, and he's got an entire network of people who are on the take. And it's just a dangerous place to be. So if you could imagine, it's time for another kick butt good guy to come back. So that's what John Christian is. He's a kick butt good guy. He's Clint Eastwood, he's Rambo, he's all these guys with a different personality, but it's a good old fashioned, you know, I'm going to knock your teeth down your throat show, and that's what it is.
I like that you have the courage to call it that, because sometimes in the networks say that, they say, well, he's an avenging person. Yeah,
he's a vengeful, an avenging father who's blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
he's the guy that, you know, he basically, if somebody's bad enough, John Christian just shoots him.
So having done all of this so far, and I mean, you're still a young guy, obviously, between singing, acting, you know, being on the screen, on the stage, big screen, small screen, writing a book, making music, touring with well-known artists. Is there anything that you still want to do that you haven't done yet?
Yeah, well, I'm doing it. Back to the Garage is an album I've been wanting to do for 25 years. I'm finally doing that. For the last 10 or 12 years, I've really, even though my foray was in the feature film world, mm-hmm. That's where I started with my company and the four projects I've directed were all feature films. And I started in three of those. Yeah, I want a series. What I really want to do is I want to combine all of my talents. So with John Christian, I've got a couple other really talented actors that are going to come onto the show. Also musicians and, multi-talented guys and multi-trained guys. This multi-discipline, I think they call it. One of the things we're going to do is while we shoot the show, I'm not going to score the whole show, but I'm going to write the theme songs that go throughout the show. And hopefully myself and these two or three other guys that will be in the show who are also musicians, we can actually release music through the show. Like one of my ideas is if it gets picked up, the way this works, just so you know, we're shooting what they call a presentation pilot. It's a pilot, initial episode. It'll be finished, edited, packaged, and then we'll hit a film market and we'll try to sell it to Netflix, Hulu, all those guys until we get the right contract and deal. And if one of them picks it up, then we'll put it on their network. If not, we're building our own network, so that's not a big deal. The idea is to not only have a show so I can write and be creative that way, but also a place to put out some new music that may not really have a place. The kind of music that'll be in this show will be like Southern blues, rock, and hardcore, you know, guitar stuff. There's not really a place for that in the industry right now, but mm-hmm. through the show, there will be. So that's kind of the point.
I find it interesting that in Rock and Roll the Movie, you were actually doing music in the movie. You're an actual musician playing a musician in a movie. And that just seems so rare sometimes, because sometimes you get, you know, the actors who play musicians, but they're really not musicians, and, you know, and probably, you know, very vice versa as well. But you get to do a different, was that your story as well? Or was it your creation?
I did everything on that movie. I wrote that movie. I produced it. I directed it, starred in it. I scored it. I even edited the movie. So that was my baby. That was my baptism by fire movie in the film industry, because I did so much on it. But, you know, when you first start out, you don't have big budgets, so you have to do a lot to get your movies done.
Sure.
So that's why I wore so many hats on the movie, primarily just because, well, I wanted to, number one, because I did want a baptism by fire situation. It was really a great experience, because the whole idea was what you just said. The whole idea was to do a story, a movie about an 80s musician who never got his chance. And so he becomes this drunken loser. And then in today's weird, you know, music industry, he gets the opportunity at his stardom. He gets a shot. He gets a second shot, which most people never get. And it's weird because he's a little bit older. And the story is there's this young kid from Illinois who goes to LA. He finds his idol, this guy named William Smythe. He's one of the biggest agents in the business. And he begs Smythe to teach him how to be an agent. Well, Smythe tricks this kid who has this beautiful classic car into this deal. He says, kid, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you an artist who's got it all. Here's the deal. You got 4 months. I'm going to do everything for you, but you got to get this artist signed to a deal. And if you can't, I get your car. And so the kid gets tricked into this bet the whole time thinking he's going to give him this young, beautiful, female, voluptuous artist, which would be really easy to sign. Well, he ends up pulling this guy who's in the restaurant, passed out in his soup, drunk off his rear end. He pulls his face out of the soup and says, kid, meet your artist. And that's the story now. So
I like it.
Movie's doing great for us. It's really been successful on Amazon Prime. It just got picked up by Tubi, which is the Fox streaming engine, which is kind of a big thing. Getting picked up by Fox is really, really big thing.
That's good. I mean, I think the more exposure that you're going to get, you know, especially with everything that you're doing, you know, you should be a bigger name, you know, so anything that puts you out there. Because I know you did Hancock as well. You worked with Will Smith.
Yep. Worked with Will for a couple of days on that movie. I had kind of a smaller role in that movie. Yeah, I worked with Will and Peter Berg for a couple of days, and great guys, great experience. And Will's a great guy. Really, really great guy. He really cares about people, cares about every actor on the set, and he shows he's grateful for where he is. And when you live in Hollywood, that's a really rare.
You know, I'm going to try and guess the answer to this question. So I think out of everything that you're doing, I think the music is always first and foremost.
Yeah, I would have to say it probably is, because it's in my soul. You know, it's literally in my heart. I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning sometimes and walk down here to the studio and start writing a song. If it's in my head and it wakes me up, I'll come down here and start writing it. I do love music, but I'm a strange animal though. It is first and foremost, but making movies is that close to the same. I mean, I love them both so much. I love making movies and I love making music. I kind of come from the old school, you know. I mean, as I was growing up in this business, of course, I was going through the 80s and the 90s. And of course I was, you know, these agents would tell me, hey, you got to do one thing. You got to do one thing. I got to know how to sell you. You got to do one thing. And I never fell for that. I mean, maybe I should have. Maybe I'd have been more successful earlier in my life if I just did one thing and I'd be known for that one thing. But I come from the old school, you know, in the old days, in the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s, you know, performers, you know, especially when they're on the movie lots, you know, they would be learning an instrument from 1 to 2. From 2 to 3, they'd be in dance. From 3 to 4, they'd be in acting class. From 4 to 5, they'd be in music class. And then from 5 to 6, they'd be doing school. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so I come from that school where I wanted to learn it all. And people think, they go, oh, you're so overly ambitious. And I think to myself, I go, well, you know, no matter what job you have, if you're the CEO of a bank, you're doing 15 different things. You're just doing it in the banking umbrella. That's all. You know, and I was also, you know, honestly, I think I give myself a little pattern. I think I was smart enough to, in the early days, to realize that not one of these things might work out. In the industry, music industry, you know, only 0.001% of musicians actually make a living playing music. I mean, it's a tiny, tiny fraction. Those of us who are in that small percentage, you know, I mean, here I've made a great living. I mean, you know, I got a kick out of this. They wrote up this article at Cannes Festival a couple years ago on Rock and Roll the Movie, actually. And that's where I got the tagline. They said, Darren Dowler is the most famous guy you've never heard of. And I said, that is a great handle. And there's some truth in that, because a lot of people don't know who I am, but they have seen me. They have heard me. Like, I'm in a PBS special that's been running for 6-7 years now, nonstop. And millions of people have seen that. And I'll be in a grocery store and I'll have some guy walk up and go, wait a minute, are you in that PBS special? The one with the Raiders? And I go, yeah, I am. And it's weird, because it'll be like a 7-Eleven in Des Moines or something. You know? and then somebody else will be like, hey, man, are you in that movie about the rock and roll singer? And I'll be, yeah. Or it'll be, did I see you with the Letterman 20 years ago? And, you know, so I've got this huge audience out there. But since I've done so many things, it's diluted and it's kind of spread out. But if that audience ever comes together, man, it's going to be cool.
Being that, you know, you've worked with so many different actors and performed on stage with a lot of different musicians, did you ever have like a dream duet that you wanted to do, either with singing, and also was there anyone that you would ever would have loved to have acted with? I mean, given the opportunity.
There are quite a few. I never got the chance to sing with some of my idols when I first grew up. Like, we mentioned Elvis Presley and Tom Jones. Those are gifts. I've met everybody in the Elvis estate, and I've met Tom Jones, but I never got to sing with him. Mm-hmm. I did show in opposite stages with him one time. And I've been in the same stage a few times with him, actually. Those guys, of course, the rock and roll guys I grew up listening to, like Burton Cummings and the Van Zants and people like that. But I think if I had to say today what's one I'd like to do, I would like to do a ballad, a really memorable ballad with Celine Dion. Because even though I'm a rock and pop and blues singer, I love singing good ballad. And I just think she's amazing with her voice. So I'd love to do a ballad with her. I like John Legend a lot. I'd like to sing a song with John Legend, too. I just love his voice and I love his musical arrangements and things like that. Big Travis Tritt fan. I'd like to do a Southern rock song and play some guitar with Travis Tritt one time. Acting wise, I would like to work with quite a few people. There's some great actors out there right now. And I would love to do something with George Clooney. I'd love to do something with Brad Pitt, because I love his work. Director wise, I'd love to play a role for Tarantino. I love Quentin Tarantino. I think he's a absolute film genius, and to work with him would be amazing. And people like that, always. I grew up wanting to work with Coppola, and of course every actor wants to work with De Niro and Pacino and those guys. You know, I'd like my shot at standing side by side with those guys. But right now my focus is not only getting my shows produced, but hopefully getting larger budgets as we produce these shows in my new company. We get a big enough budget, I might hire some of those guys. You know, it's all about budget in the film industry. I've got a movie in casting right now in LA. It's called, what is the working title we decided to use? It's called A Soldier's Honor. It's basically a two-actor piece that takes place in the desert. And it's in casting as we speak. We're trying to find a star to play the lead role. I'll play the secondary role in it, but we're trying to find a star to play the lead role in it. We're under that challenge where we've got $2 million to make a movie. It's hard to get a star on board when you only have $2 million. You know, unless you're dealing with about 10 million bucks and you've got 2.5 mil, it's hard to find a star of name that will actually, do a picture. So we're in that challenge right now. And my goal is to raise the budgets. If I can raise the budgets, I can get these stars that I've been talking to. I've talked to a bunch of stars for this movie, but the money's just not there for them right now. You know, if they're going to take 6-8 weeks out of their schedule, well, that's 6-8 weeks they could be making $7 million over here if something comes up. So they're not going to lock themselves down for $1 million.
So if people want to get in touch with you or find more about you, we got to steer them to your website. Is there anywhere else that they can look?
You know, the best place is always my website. It's just darrendowler.com. We're even going to have a pre-order link for the new album on there soon. I've got through my website, I'm going to be doing an online music special here in a few weeks. I'll be releasing the date and the link for that here pretty soon. I'll be doing some songs from some of the groups I've been with. I'll be doing a couple of the new songs from the album. I'll be doing maybe a new concept song that I just wrote, a guitar song. And, it's an interesting thing because of COVID, I've been doing any touring for a year and a half. But I've had all these emails. People say, hey, could you do an online special? And the truth is, I've just been so busy with my other stuff, I haven't been able to do it. So I'm trying to get to that now, because part of my job is always keeping my fans happy. So that's the next goal. We're going to finish the album. And as soon as the album's finished, and I should be finished with the album this week, goes into mixing beginning of next week. So in 2 weeks, the album will be released. They'll be able to pre-buy it next week. Yeah, anybody can get in touch with me. Go to my website. I've got an email button there. You can write me. All my contact information is there, my agencies, all that stuff. If they want to hear some of the new music, there's a music page. There's a lot of cool stuff on there. There's a merch page. It's got some of the coolest stuff you've ever seen from my book, The War of Angels. You got to see this coffee mug. It's a coffee mug with Michael the Archangel standing there with these big stone wings. It's awesome.
That'll put a little more of a kick in your morning caffeine, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you got Michael the Archangel backing you up for the day.
Okay, before I let you go, this is, of course, your guest choice. What's your favorite impression?
I have so many I like. My favorite one is probably Elvis Presley. I think my two favorite impressions are Elvis Presley, and I love doing Christopher Walken as well. I'm working on a new one now. Now I've got Jean-Claude Van Damme and Jason Statham. I'm working on a bit between those two guys.
Why don't we have Christopher Walken say something to Elvis Presley? Can we do that?
Sure. Wow.
Elvis, how do you move those hips?
Well, Chris, it's real simple, man. I get a Darren Dollar War of Angels mug, and I drink some real strong coffee in the morning. And then my hips just start moving by themselves. Yeah, people think it's because I'm sexy, but what it really is the caffeine makes me have to pee. Well, thank you, Chris. It's always good talking to you, man.
Wow! See you next time.
Bravo. See, what you guys are missing out, you got to go to DarrenDarla.com and learn all about this guy and check out some of his handiwork. And also, we will be looking forward to the album Back to the Garage. When it's out, I will post it on my social pages if you like.
Absolutely.
Let the Rebels know.
I
think they're going to enjoy it. Darren Dowler, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Hey, Jim, it was a pleasure. And when we get the TV show up and running, if you want to do this again, I'm game.
Absolutely.
Have a great day, my friend.
You too.
I like the way you shake, girl, the way you move your hips. I like the way you dance, girl, the way you lick your lips. I like the way you talk me, moving across the floor. I like the way you beckon me, and then you lock the door. I like the way you dress, girl, yellow ribbon in your hair. I know you're just a little crazy, but I like you there. I like you just a little jealous when I get the eye. I like you all but the zealous. I even like when you cry. But the thing I like the most is that you love me. When you love me, I'm most, because you love me. You slap me right across the face. I like it when I smack you right across your face. I like it when you squeeze me so tight that you shake. I like it when you love me when you start to quake. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, 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 oh. But the thing I like the most is when you love me. When you love me, I boast, because you love me. The thing I like the most is that you love me. When you love me, I boast, because you love me.
Be a rebel. Follow the show at Sherpolution on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And that was a track from Darren Cole, The Way You Love Me. Woo, bluesy. I like it. I like it. And I think you're going to like it too. Check out his website and you can hear some of his music. And keep an eye on him when he's coming by your town. I'm sure you will be in for a great night of entertainment if you go see this guy in concert. And if you're not seeing him in concert, maybe you'll catch him in a movie or a TV show. We got to keep our eyes peeled for this guy. Very talented. And in the meantime, it is time for me to head on out of here. All right, Mr. Bruce. Yes, and I think I will work on some of my impressions of famous singers. Maybe, you know, let's start with Tiny Tim. How about that, Mr. Bruce? No, don't hit me. Ow! Ooh. Tiptoe through the tulips. Viva la Sherpalution. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sherpa Screening Room. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. I'm Mr. Bruce, and this has been a Sherpaloo Studios production. Viva la Sherpalution.